This is the Narcissist Survivor Society podcast. And this is another survivor story.
Ever listen to those podcasts, you know, about like toxic families?
Yeah.
You think, man, what's it really like growing up in a family like that?
Yeah.
Well, today we're diving deep into one woman's story, growing up with a narcissistic mother. We're taking a look at this letter she wrote to the Narcissist Survivor Society podcast.
Ooh, wow.
It's intense.
Yeah.
This isn't some clinical study.
Yeah.
You know, this is raw. This is honest. And right off the bat, she uses this powerful analogy describing life with her mom as like living in a house of mirrors.
Wow.
What do you think about that? Why is that image so powerful, you think?
Well, because it really illustrates the way that a narcissist, especially a narcissistic parent, manipulates reality, right?
Like, yeah.
They're holding up this distorted mirror to their children. So the kid ends up questioning their own perceptions of everything.
It's like you never know what's up or down.
Exactly. It creates this environment of uncertainty. And for a child to grow up like that, it's really hard to ever trust your own feelings, your own instincts.
You're always second guessing yourself.
Like, yeah.
Is this real? Am I overreacting?
Exactly. And that can have a lasting impact, even into adulthood, because it really erodes your sense of self, your confidence in your own judgment.
Yeah, you're always questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And she shares this memory from her childhood. And it seems so small, but I think it really hit me.
Okay.
She's like 10 years old, and she's picked out this outfit for a family gathering. And she's so excited about it, right? Like just a normal part of growing up, finding your own style.
Right, absolutely.
But then her mom sees her, and she gives her this look of disgust, makes some comment about how ridiculous she looks.
Oh, man.
How can something so small leave, like such a scar?
I think it's because, you know, it's never really about the outfit.
Right.
It's about control.
Okay.
For a narcissist, and especially a narcissistic parent, seeing their child express themselves, even through something like clothing, it can be threatening to them.
Oh, interesting.
It's a reminder that that child is not an extension of them.
Right. They're their own person.
They are their own person.
With their own identity.
Exactly.
So instead of celebrating that, the mom feels the need to kind of undermine it.
I'm small, yeah.
To keep them dependent.
To maintain that power dynamic. And narcissists are really experts, unfortunately, at using these subtle tactics like backhanded compliments, veiled criticisms, to really chip away at a child's self-esteem over time.
It's so insidious. And this need for control, it seems to permeate like every aspect of her relationship with her mother. She calls her mother Patricia in the letter, and she paints this picture of a woman who constantly needs to be the center of attention. Like, the world revolves around Patricia.
Right, because that's a real hallmark of narcissism, that constant need for attention. They have this void within them, this deep-seated insecurity that drives them to seek validation from external sources constantly.
Right.
And often their children become the primary source of that narcissistic supply.
Oh, wow.
Whether it's through praise, admiration, or even just by being a captive audience.
Just being there.
Exactly.
But a child can't be expected to constantly cater to their parents' ego. Right?
Yeah.
So there's this inevitable clash.
Of course.
And we see this play out in the letter when she starts dating. She's 16. She finally meets a guy. She connects with him. He treats her well. And Patricia sees this as a threat.
Because this is a critical developmental stage for a teenager, right?
Totally.
Exploring their independence, forming their own romantic attachments.
There's love, maybe.
Exactly. But for a narcissistic mother who thrives on control, it's terrifying for them.
Because it means she's pulling away.
Pulling away.
Forming bonds outside of the mother's influence.
Precisely. And because narcissists lack empathy, they can't understand the needs and feelings of others.
It's all about them.
It's all about them. So they interpret this very natural separation as a personal attack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like their whole world is collapsing because their daughter dared to grow up.
And so because she sees this as a threat, what does she do? She sabotages the whole thing.
Oh.
Tells her he's not good enough, calls his mother. I mean, just goes on a whole rampage.
Yeah, classic narcissistic behavior, trying to maintain control. And they'll use any tactic they can. Creating drama, sowing those seeds of doubt. It always comes back to them and their needs.
And it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
You know, because you see this young woman just trying to live her own life, have her own experiences. And her own mother is the one yanking her back.
Right.
There's this term she uses to describe it.
Okay.
She called it gaslighting. And I think we should probably unpack that a little because it's come up a couple of times.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a form of emotional abuse and it's really insidious. You know, gaslighting makes you doubt your own sanity.
It's like you're being manipulated, but you don't even know how it's happening.
Exactly. It's like the rug is constantly being pulled out from under you.
Yeah. And she gives this example about packing for a family vacation.
Okay.
She packed her suitcase. She's like carefully doing it, making sure she has everything.
Right.
And then her mother comes in, rips it all apart, and insist that she did it all wrong.
And that's where it gets really interesting with gaslighting, right?
Okay.
Because it's not like she's giving her specific feedback. It's not, oh, you forgot your swimsuit or you packed the wrong shoes.
Yeah.
It's these vague accusations and it's designed to make her question her own judgment, her memory. Like, wait, did I do this wrong?
Maybe I'm not as capable as I thought I was.
Exactly.
And over time, that can be really damaging, that constant undermining.
Right. It erodes your sense of self-worth.
You start to believe that you're not good enough.
And it becomes this vicious cycle, right? Because the more the narcissist chips away at your confidence, the more dependent you become on them.
Which just feeds their need for control.
Exactly. It all goes back to that House of Mirrors analogy.
Right.
You're never quite sure what's real, what's a reflection, what's distorted.
And it's not just these isolated incidents either, right?
Yeah.
She talks about this pattern of her mom using anything that she's insecure about against her.
Like what?
Like if she's struggling with her weight, her mom's right there to comment on how much prettier she'd be if she just lost a few pounds.
Oh, man. That's rough. Preying on vulnerabilities.
Classic narcissistic tactic.
Yeah. And it cuts deep, too.
Yeah.
Because it exploits those things that the child's already self-conscious about.
Absolutely. Or when she's away at college, she's dealing with anxiety, depression, which, let's be honest, that's pretty common for young adults.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. A lot of people go through that.
And you would think that a mother's instinct would be to offer comfort, right? Like to reassure her.
Right. To be supportive.
But with Patricia, it seems like it's the opposite.
Because, again, it's not about the child's needs. It's about the narcissist needing to feel superior. So if the child is struggling, that challenges their carefully constructed image of themselves. You know, like they have it all figured out.
So it's like a no-win situation for her.
Totally.
And sadly, this kind of pattern, it can continue into adulthood. And we see that in the letter, right?
Her.
She gets her first real job.
Okay.
She's proud of herself, rightfully so. But her mom, she just can't handle it.
Because it's a threat to their ego, right?
Yeah.
They can't stand to see anyone else succeed, even their own child.
So what does she do? She tries to sabotage her daughter's career. She calls her boss, makes up all these concerns about her mental health.
Wow. The ultimate betrayal, really.
It's awful.
It's a desperate attempt to maintain that control, even if it means harming their own child.
And for her, for the daughter, this becomes a turning point. She realizes that she has to make a choice.
Wow.
Stay trapped in this cycle or break free.
And that is a monumental decision.
And that's a huge decision to walk away from your family.
It is. There's this pull, you know, this pressure to keep those family bonds strong no matter what. People who haven't been in that situation, they just don't get it.
So for someone to choose themselves in that situation,
it really says something about how bad it was.
Yeah. And she talks about that in the letter, how much pain there is in that. The estrangement from her mom, the judgment from other family members who just believe, you know, whatever her mom's telling them.
Right. They've probably been manipulated too.
Totally. It's like she's, I don't know, navigating a minefield just to protect herself.
And that's what people don't always realize. The strength it takes to walk away from something like that.
Yeah.
It goes against everything we're taught, right? About family and sticking together no matter what.
It's like society tells us we should put up with anything if it's family.
And that's just not true.
And this letter is proof of that.
For sure.
She had to choose herself.
It's about recognizing that you deserve better, that this is not normal.
Right. And that's how her letter ends, you know, with hope.
Okay, that's good. That's good to hear.
It's not that she's not dealing with things, but she's found some peace and a freedom she didn't think was possible.
Which that brings us to what I think is the biggest takeaway from all of this.
Okay, what's that?
She says it right there in the letter. You can't change a narcissist.
Oof, that's got to be hard to hear, especially when it's your parent we're talking about.
It's really hard. And I think a lot of people get stuck in that cycle of trying to please them.
Yeah, like you can somehow earn their love if you just, I don't know, do the right thing.
Exactly. But that love, it'll always have strings attached.
Because it's not real love.
Right. And the sooner you accept that you can't control other people, that you can only control how you react,
the sooner you can start to heal.
so powerful. So for anyone listening out there, maybe going through something similar, what advice would you give them based on, you know, everything we've learned from her story?
I think the most important thing is you're not alone.
Yeah.
And you are worthy of love, real love.
Yeah.
Unconditional, even if you don't get it from your family.
Yeah, she talks about that, actually, about how for the first time she's actually feeling what real love is. Not that conditional kind of love that, you know, a narcissist offers.
Transactional, yeah.
But genuine, healthy love.
And that's what it's all about, right? Knowing your own worth and surrounding yourself with people who see it too, flaws and all.
Such a powerful message. Well, thank you so much for diving deep with me on this one. To everyone listening, keep asking those tough questions, keep learning, and most importantly, keep choosing yourselves.
Thank you for listening to another survivor story on the Narcissist Survivor Society podcast. Do you have a story about overcoming narcissistic abuse? We invite you to share your experience and help others heal. Reach out to us on TikTok, Facebook, or Instagram. Just subscribe and send us a direct message with your survivor story. Your story could be featured in an upcoming episode of the Narcissist Survivor Society podcast.